plans for final victory in World War II, occupation and control of Germany. But more important, Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin dedicated their nations to the foundations for permanent peace through a United Nations organization. Crushing Germany from the east and west, the Allied armies met at the River Elbe and joined hands in celebration of victory. Russia and the United States, with their allies, had fought the good fight together. Final victory was in sight. Man's hopes of lasting peace were high. But the great architect of victory was not to see the final triumph. Suddenly, President Franklin Roosevelt was dead. Mourned throughout the world, he left in the United Nations organization the framework for lasting peace on Earth. World War II ended, and in Tokyo Bay, General MacArthur spoke for all people.
Pray that peace be now restored to the world, and that God will preserve it always.
Meanwhile, in San Francisco, delegates of 50 nations had met to form the United Nations organization. President Truman came from Washington for the signing of the historic charter. Foreign Minister Molotov of the Soviet Union lent his presence to the solemn and hopeful expression of man's resolution to live in peace. The nations were united. The Big Five, China, Russia, Britain, France, and the United States, led the peoples of the world as they launched a rule of international law and a bill of human rights, a rule of law they believed no nation, large or small, would dare defy. The United Nations was set up, a tribunal empowered to mediate international disputes and to enforce its decisions. Soon, this machinery was put to the test. In Indonesia and elsewhere, people felt the strong desire for independence and the control of their own destinies. And this had been seen in the United Nations Charter. A Republic of Indonesia had been set up, embracing a large part of the island empire, which had until then been under the rule of the Netherlands. Civil unrest broke out in the Republic and the other islands. Although the Netherlands had recognized the new republic, differences arose, and the Dutch began military operations. In July 1947, the hostilities in Indonesia were brought to the attention of the Security Council of the United Nations. The Council immediately issued a ceasefire order and appointed a committee of good officers to aid in the peaceful negotiation of the dispute between the Netherlands and the Republican leaders. Guided by the United Nations Committee, the two parties to the dispute signed a truce in January 1948. Hostilities broke out again in December. Jakarta, capital of the Republic of Indonesia, and many other towns in Java and Sumatra fell to the Netherlands forces. The Republic adopted a scorched earth policy as refugees fled before the Dutch forces. The Security Council met in emergency session in Paris and again called upon the parties to cease all military operations. The Council recommended the establishment of an independent United States of Indonesia at the earliest possible date. The United Nations Commission was instructed to assist in negotiations. A roundtable conference between the Netherlands and the Indonesian Republic began in The Hague in August 1949. With the help of the United Nations Commission, the conference agreed on a charter of transfer of sovereignty and on main points of future cooperation between the Netherlands and the United States of Indonesia. The United States of Indonesia, embracing scores of islands and including nearly 80 million people, was a reality. And late in December 1949 at The Hague, Queen Juliana of the Netherlands signed the document which transferred complete sovereignty over Indonesia to the Republic of the United States of Indonesia and recognized it as an independent nation. The question had been peacefully resolved. The subcontinent of India was another potential trouble spot after World War II. Its millions also looked forward to independence after years of passive resistance under British rule. Great Britain, following a policy of self-determination of peoples, made plans to give India complete freedom as an independent dominion of the British Commonwealth of Nations. But the question of independence was not simple, for it posed another delicate question: the partition of the subcontinent between Hindu India and Muslim Pakistan. Meetings were held between Hindu and Muslim leaders. Mahatma Gandhi, great symbol of Indian independence, spoke for Hindu India. Muhammad Ali Jinnah was the Muslim leader in the fight for the independence of Pakistan. Pandit Nehru succeeded to the leadership of Hindu India on the death of Gandhi. And under his leadership, the independence of India was proclaimed on August 15, 1947. India became an independent republic in the British Commonwealth. Millions of Indians, led by Prime Minister Nehru, celebrated the independence of this great nation. The new dominion took over the charter membership which India, under British rule, had held in the United Nations. The new Republic of Pakistan consisted of two zones in the northwest and northeast corners of the subcontinent, separated by 1,000 miles of Dominion of India territory. The territorial limits of Pakistan were determined on the basis of the Islamic faith of the majority of its people. Led by Muhammad Ali Jinnah, the new Dominion of Pakistan also celebrated its independence on August 15, 1947. And at Karachi, capital of the new state, the joyous people hailed their new nation. The partition of India led almost immediately to disputes. The first of these centered around the independent state of Jammu and Kashmir, which had declared its adherence to the new dominion of India. Protesting that Pakistan was aiding tribal disorder in Kashmir, the dominion of India sent troops into Kashmir. And in this area of the world, there appeared a threat to international peace. Pakistan denied the charges of India and questioned the legality of Kashmir's accession to India. Continuing thus increased the threat to world peace and brought the dispute to the attention of the United Nations. The Security Council called upon both parties to terminate hostilities in Kashmir and appointed a commission to work with the two new states toward a peaceful settlement of the dispute. Admiral Chester Nimitz of the United States was appointed to administer a plebiscite in Jammu and Kashmir if all parties to the dispute agreed to this solution of the problem. Meanwhile, India and Pakistan were urged to continue their efforts to reach a peaceful settlement. Prime Minister Liaquat Ali Khan of Pakistan and Prime Minister Nehru of India continued their negotiations with the aid and encouragement of the United Nations. To the United Nations also came the problem of Palestine. A British mandate since the end of World War I, in recent years this small country had been the scene of disorder and bloodshed. The age-old struggle between Arab and Jew and the aspirations of the Jewish people for a homeland, aspirations which had been intensified through the persecution of the Jews before and during World War II, had aggravated the Palestine problem. At a special session, the General Assembly of the United Nations established a special committee on Palestine and sent it to this troubled area to study the problems and make recommendations. The United Nations Committee spent months in Palestine traveling over the disputed areas and conferring with Arabs and Jews. The majority of the committee members recommended that Palestine be partitioned into an Arab state and a Jewish state, and under international control, the city of Jerusalem, the three to be linked by economic union. The General Assembly accepted this recommendation. But the United Nations' job was not yet done. Border clashes increased, and soon open warfare broke out in this troubled area of the world. United Nations continued its efforts for peace, and the General Assembly appointed Count Folke Bernadotte of Sweden as special mediator, and he was charged with negotiating a settlement of the situation in Palestine. Count Bernadotte devoted himself to meetings with the Arabs and the Jews, and was finally successful in arranging a truce. While striving for a basis for permanent peace in Palestine, Count Bernadotte was assassinated by terrorists in Jerusalem. The world mourned the first United Nations casualty in the struggle for world peace. The truce arranged by Count Bernadotte was broken, and violence again spread throughout the disputed areas of Palestine. Dr. Ralph J. Bunch of the United States was appointed acting mediator and continued the efforts of Count Bernadotte to find a solution. Through Dr. Bunch's negotiations as mediator, final treaties were signed and peace came to the troubled Holy Land. The State of Israel had been proclaimed, and the people rejoiced in their new nation, a haven of refuge for the displaced and persecuted members of the Jewish faith from all over the world. Israel was admitted to membership in the United Nations, and her flag was raised at Lake Success. Again, the United Nations had, through peaceful mediation, resolved an international dispute which had been a threat to world peace. The problem of Korea also seemed ideally suited to peaceful settlement under United Nations auspices. In September 1947, the United States submitted the question of Korean independence to the General Assembly. A United Nations commission was appointed to forward the establishment of a free, democratic government of Korea through nationwide elections. The Soviet, previously pledged to Korean independence, now refused to participate in the work of this commission. This policy of obstruction was not new. In Seoul, capital of Korea, the two previous years had seen fruitless meetings between the Soviet and United States military commanders. Soviet obstruction had resulted in the permanent and tragic division of the Korean people at the 38th parallel, which had been originally established only as a temporary boundary for administrative purposes. The chief task of the newly created United Nations Commission was to obtain cooperation from the Soviet authorities in establishing a united, independent Republic of Korea. This task was made impossible by Soviet refusal to allow the Commission to cross the 38th parallel, and Soviet refusal to cooperate in any way. Only in South Korea were free elections under the impartial supervision of the Commission possible. Here, true to its pledges, the United Nations assisted in the creation of an independent nation based on the freely expressed will of the people. Soviet obstruction had prevented the participation of all Koreans in a unified republic, but a republic there was. The newly elected government continued the work of the United States military government, which had voluntarily resigned its powers to the new nation. Land reform, education, public safety, and many other projects were now the concern of the new government. The people of the Republic of Korea settled down to the pursuits of peace. Suddenly and without warning, the communist-controlled North Koreans hurled themselves upon their peaceful neighbors to the south, and in an act of stark and unprovoked aggression, attempted the destruction of the Republic. The peaceful citizens of the Republic of Korea, torn from their homes, separated from their families, formed the long and miserable lines of refugees, which are always the first fruit of ruthless conquest. The United Nations Security Council met in emergency session at Lake Success to take action on the North Korean aggression. The Soviet Union chose to be absent. The council quickly dispatched a ceasefire order to the North Korean regime. This order was ignored. The council then voted for United Nations military action against the invaders. General Douglas MacArthur was named commander-in-chief of the United Nations forces in Korea. And after visiting the battlefront, he accepted the first United Nations battle flag to be flown by the United Nations forces fighting the communist invaders. For 5 weeks, as Korean Republican and United States forces under the United Nations flag fought to stem the tide of North Korean communist aggression, while the Security Council took all emergency steps in an effort to halt that aggression, the delegate of the Soviet Union pointedly absented himself from the United Nations deliberations and decisions. Improvising the defense of the Republic of Korea, and with the heroic help of the Republican fighting forces, the United Nations troops fought and fell back, trading space for time until more help could arrive. On August 1st, Soviet delegate Jacob Malik, for the first time since the invasion, returned to take his seat in the Security Council. It was the turn of the Soviet to preside. Malik, deliberately ignoring the North Korean communist aggression, began a systematic campaign as president to block any action on the Korean War by the Security Council. Meanwhile, the United Nations troops battled the Soviet armed communist invaders, and the Security Council tried without success to prod the Soviet delegate to his responsibilities. As August day followed August day, the United Nations continued its fight in Korea. In the Security Council, the Soviet delegate sat impassive, rendering impotent the Council's efforts to end the bloodshed in Korea. As August waned, United States Delegate Warren Austin, in righteous wrath but in simple terms, made clear for all the world to see the sinister actions of the enemies of democracy.
Whose troops are attacking deep in somebody else's territory? The North Koreans. Whose territory is overrun by an invading army? The Republic of Korea. Who is assisting the Republic of Korea to defend itself? The United Nations, with the support of 53 of the 59 members. Who has the influence and the power to call off the invading North Korean army? The Soviet Union. Who is responsible for the bombing and bloodshed that inevitably ensued from the fact of aggression? The North Koreans and those who support them. Who then can stop the bombing and the bloodshed? The North Koreans and those who support their aggression. What member of the Security Council is supporting the North Korean regime in the Security Council? The Soviet Union. Who then is supporting the United Nations Charter and really working for peace? The 53 members of the United Nations who are supporting the Republic of Korea. Is the Soviet Union one of the 53? No.
No, not the Soviet Union, but the 53 of the 59 members of the United Nations which are sharing in the United Nations action in Korea. The nations united for peace who have used the peaceful methods of mediation in 5 years of United Nations progress, and the nations who now and forever stand ready to meet and halt aggression anywhere with all the powers vested in them by the United Nations Charter.